Welcome back to Sharp Elbows with Fran Nada and our special guest, Matthew Brongen. We have a caller on the line. Catherine, thank you for joining us this morning on Sharp Elbows.
Hi, good morning. I was just calling. I'm a boomer. You're listening to Boomer Radio, you know, or we're on Boomer Radio. And I was just wondering if you've heard much, or you probably have are aware of the fact that in the 60s and all, they started freedom schools, and the Black Panthers also started some of their own classes in freedom and schools of their own. And I just want to remind you that learning doesn't have to be in a school or even in a building. And if the schools aren't catching up, I think maybe the community could pick up and get it started, at least in a few places. Because I know the Black Panthers started the whole school breakfast before school. And that caught on, and now people take for granted that you have breakfast, you know, available at school. That was started by the Black Panthers because they just started feeding kids because they weren't eating before they went to school. And they didn't wait for the government or any agency to fill in. They just started doing it. So I just think it might be something for various groups and so, you know, to think about. You know, and like I said, it doesn't have to be in the school. It doesn't even need to be in a building. Even a group of small kids or a small group of people, you know, I just think that's a way to get the ball rolling.
Thank you so much, Catherine, for that input. I agree. There's oftentimes policy coming out from white supremacist systems lacks a lot of innovation, imagination, and creativity. And the power of grassroots organizing and coalition building really is that folks who are coming in with lived experiences that are not reflected or represented in their politics are able to identify the needs better than anyone else and act on them. And so when it comes to school breakfast programs, or like where education and learning happens, absolutely does not need to look like a traditional school. And I think that empowering and really giving agency to folks who are looking past just a building and see infrastructure as more than just things is necessary for us to progress and really move past obstructionist policies coming from the conservative right that aim to really hold us back or bring us, even take us back into times where we weren't able to think more broadly about what education and where learning and what learning environments can look like.
Yeah. I mean, what Catherine just described is mutual aid, and mutual aid is kind of this phenomenon that the people, the community pick up the slack when our elected officials, sorry, Fran, you know, leave gaps open. Matthew, what are your thoughts on what Catherine just said?
Absolutely. The freedom schools haven't been, you know, lost on a lot of organizations. There's definitely a lot of internal learning. You do see some, at least from my, I guess, 1,000-foot view of across the nation, some of these organizations creating and doing things like freedom schools. Unfortunately, again, that isn't something sexy that our press would report on. Particularly as it comes to Black folks, we don't really do a lot of the positive things, such as covering the thousands of anti-violence and anti-gun violence marches and organizations that are across the country, and people claim that Black folks don't care about gun violence, right? And freedom schools are kind of part of that, although there, as far as I know, there doesn't seem to be a lot. It's that legacy is absolutely there and still built in. And in a lot of ways, something I'd love to see more of, that informal learning structure, that mutual aid, because it does provide a structural alternative to, in essence, what you're seeing beyond just even just white supremacy, in my view, is you know, a failing government and failing government institutions. We're at a real crisis of governance here, and ability to govern effectively and bring the, you know, needs to people, and mutual aid is instrumental in picking up those pieces.
On that end, we're coming up on the 1 year anniversary of the, you know, terrible shooting of Jacob Blake in Kenosha by a police officer, and the lack of charges that happened here in terms of justice. What is your message, Matthew? And what are your thoughts about about how much we haven't changed maybe since then, how short we've fallen when it comes to policymaking and police reform, and what would you like kind of legislators to really say on the 23rd and even after?
Yeah.
Sorry, this a little heavy question. Yeah.
You're all right. Police reform is, well, it falls short partly because it accepts the framing that police, or particularly law enforcement as we imagine it, are actually effective at addressing the social ills that they're called to respond to. It just doesn't do what it needs to do. So that's part of the problem. And I mean, there's a lack of accountability, but these most crime, isn't because of a lack of policing. Police actually do a bad job of preventing crime. They're not, completely ineffectual, but it's a low percentage that they do in preventing crime and preventing violent crime. They're a response unit. Mm-hmm. Things like unemployment have much more of a correlation than, police numbers to crime and violent crime. You're also talking about larger social issues of populations that our government doesn't really seem to care about. And so there's an aspect of social rebellion in there as well. Again, an ineffectual or uncaring government. So how are you going to expect people to, not socially in a certain way, that have been pushed in specific conditions, generation upon generation, lash out or rebel in a multitude of different ways. That's where I kind of fall on the abolition side is these things are just so rooted in white supremacy that they're just going to repeat it regardless of what they are. So this gets back to really this reevaluation of our values, reevaluation of what we want to invest in. Are we going to invest in programs of social uplift, or are we going to invest in violence? And police are state violence. They're a violent entity. That do this. So we have to really not like go beyond just reimagining public safety, but are we again investing in these base things of humanity, of housing, of healthcare, of education, of like these things that create dignity amongst people that shouldn't be earned. Like there's this idea that people have to earn the dignity to live. And then this is a part of also white supremacy and racism, because it paints that lack of earned dignity upon entire groups of people for BS reasons of the color of skin, right? And so that's baked into it all. But it's people, regardless of who you are, deserve the dignity of being able to live. Period. And access to the resources you need to live, period. Nobody should have to earn the dignity to live.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's profound. And it brings me back to, a journalist asked AOC, you speak a lot about a police-free society, or working towards a society that doesn't need, or that can reimagine law enforcement. What does that look like? And she was like, that looks like a white suburb, right?
Yeah.
The resources, the opportunities for people of color that does give them the dignity that they are entitled to and that they deserve. Francesca, I want to ask you, coming up on the anniversary of the shooting of Jacob Blake, what would you like to see the legislature do, or how should they? What are you looking forward in terms of how they speak about it, particularly your colleagues?
I would like them to not just speak about it. I think listening to you and Matthew, that as policymakers, as lawmakers, we have a responsibility to embrace, understand, and help shift culture, right? And right now, our culture and our laws are not ones that reflect community, care, respect, or dignity. So in speaking about Jacob Blake and the horrific shooting, I hope that all of my colleagues truly do embrace that we have a responsibility to shift the culture, and we have a responsibility to shift the laws, and we cannot do it only as lawmakers. We can only do it as members, with members of the community who understand that bringing resources, bringing agency to people to be able to make those decisions for themselves, that's part of our responsibility. And so I hope they speak with care, and then I hope they act in care as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, you've been listening to Nadal McCoshvey, Representative Francesca Hong, Matthew Bronigan. Matthew, thank you so much for joining us. If you would like to listen more to all the wealth of information that he has, tune in to Finding the Warmth of Our Sun on Madison 365. And if you're in Madison today and you're looking for something to do, there's Africa Fest going on at 12 at McPike Park and Eakin Park Festival as well. So hopefully we'll see some of you all there. Have a good one.
Thanks for having me.
I go ask your questions like what makes a man. Oh, it's 2020.